information is free.
The law?
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge,
tonight we care.
Appear to border
and it shows.
The law?
The country.
You will remember nothing you have seen or heard here.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, it made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
How do you get most of your news about national and international issues? Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 233 from Media Monarchy. It's September 30th, 2011. My name is James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster of the site and show MediaMonarchy.com, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. This week, remote control Rezwan, peaceful protest in Black Sunday, shutdown sources and the deceitful news purge, pantries, pets, and pig thieves on Food World Order, cookies, retention, and the Heavenly Palace on Cyberspace War, grave guitars and Google scrolls on holy hexes, and all the other media memes in the kingdom. Episode 233, September 30th, 2011, MediaMonarchy.com. Just a Creep from the Dum Dum Girls. Their brand new album, Only in Dreams, is out on Sub Pop Records. And that's how we start off this 233rd episode from MediaMonarchy.com. My name is James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster of the site and show MediaMonarchy.com, and I welcome you aboard, new and returning listeners. It's the last day of September. Three quarters of the year gone. September 30th, 2011. We're coming to you live, as always, from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, live every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific time. And a huge thanks to the stations that simulcast this show, ZeroPointRadio.com and RevereRadio.net. And a nice little announcement. KDXRadio.com is picking up the show. They will be rebroadcasting it Saturday nights at 11 Central Time. KDXRadio.com. And they said they heard the show on ZeroPointRadio.com. So a huge thanks to them and all the other alternative media outlets who helped spread the word about this show. All our episodes are archived on either radioforall.net or archive.org. And of course, we're on FaceSpace, Twitter, Tube, Tumblr, Gmail, Skype, all with Media Monarchy as your keyword or username. A huge thanks to Michael in Ontario and David in the UK for their generous donations over the past week to Media Monarchy. You can see the donate button on the top right of the homepage. Your support helps keep us going and growing. Paying the bills, paying the dues. Keep it in the black. As we look at the breaking news on this September 30th morning, CBS News asking the question, who was Anwar al-Awlaki? Well, we're going to get into that. Obama says terrorists will find no safe haven anywhere. Sounding like the previous puppet. American strike on American target revives contentious constitutional issue. Oh, that's right. Oh, whoops. Awlaki is a U.S. citizen. Extrajudicial killings from the Obamasiah. Bank of America faces outrage over debit card charge. The troubled bank, already besieged by multi-billion dollar lawsuits and massive financial losses, saw its stock fall more than 2% in late morning trading after announcing they will start charging fees for the privilege of using a debit card. Family finds rescues man who plunged off a cliff 6 days earlier. California farm recalls lettuce amid listeria concerns, and we will get more on that latest sky is falling outbreak when we get to all the latest on foodworldorder.com. The other names in the news: Romney, Hickman, Schwarzenegger, and again, Awlaki, the CIA lackey. Dining at the Pentagon. But we'll get to that. Let's blast through all the alternative media that yours truly is proud enough to be involved with in some way, shape, or form, if only through slavish promotion. But I want to remind you, we put up our latest mixtape episode last Saturday. It was early Saturday morning. Mixtape 12, Lawn Boy Walkman Volume 2, You Can Get With This or You Can Get With That, featuring more of the greatest hits of my lawn mowing youth with whole chunks of music from Faith No More, Black Crowes, Lemonheads, Rollins Band, Gene Loves Jezebel, Pennywise, Black Sheep, all kinds of stuff I mowed lawns to and listened to on cassette tape as we've been going down the nostalgia hole. And as I believe I promise you at the end of that Mixtape 12, we'll make sure the next one will be more forward-thinking and crazy. So again, if you subscribe to the feeds, put it in your feed catcher of choice, whether that's Google Reader or iTunes or anything and everything, feeds.feedburner.com/Media Monarchy, and you'll get all the articles, all the PDFs, all the MP3s, all the MP4s, and mores. Episode 85 from New World next week, the weekly video series between myself and James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. Remote controlled plane plot, Qaeda versus conspiracist and activist repost. Our first story, Massachusetts musician accused of D.C. terrorist plot, or feds foil remote controlled terror attack in Washington, but not the remote controlled terror attack 10 years ago on Washington and New York and Pennsylvania. Our second story, Al-Qaeda calls on Ahmadinejad to end 9/11 conspiracy theory, sourcing back to The Guardian, but The Onion scooped them 4 years ago with their amazing, prescient, cutting satire video. Al-Qaeda says 9/11 conspiracy theories ridiculous. In the related bit from Politico, CIA and Pentagon fight to keep Osama death photos a secret, as everything surrounding the alleged assassination of the alleged terrorist mastermind of the alleged Osama bin Laden is a secret. It could do exceptionally grave damage to national security. And our third story was the takedown and repost of the alternative website activistpost.com. Google did it. They apologized, but it brings the question to myself, especially because I host all my sites for free on Google's Blogger. I just buy the domain name and have it point to the free site where I don't have to pay for any hosting or anything. And it always works. Always has worked. Knock on wood. The related bit that we will get to in just a few minutes, internet hits all-time high as news source, and we throw in a New World Next Week flashback video for you, The Death of Printaganda. All that and so much more on the latest, greatest episode of NewWorldNextWeek.com, which takes us to episode 201 from James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. Episode 201 is Education 201. You know, like your classes. We're beyond 101. We're moving into the next era of Corbett Report. Delving further into the pedagogy of the oppressed and how to liberate ourselves through self-education. Featuring an interview with Richard Grove of TragedyandHope.com. Some of the other latest videos from Corbett Report, Amerithrax 10 Years On, and an historical analysis of 7-7 with Tom Secker, and that is on Global Research TV. All that and so much more from CorbettReport.com. The aforementioned Richard Grove has a podcast, PeaceRevolution.org. Episode 40 is called Consumer Kindergarten. And it goes through everything from Dead Poets Society to consuming kids, corporations in the classroom, Ron Paul on Carol Quigley's Tragedy and Hope, the oldest schools in the United Kingdom, epistemology, solipsism, Freemasonry, secrets, America's secret establishment, unequal protection, the story of the Rockefeller Foundation, and so much more in the jam-packed number one higher education show on Podomatic, that is PeaceRevolution.org, episode 40, Consumer Kindergarten. My man right here in Portland, Oregon, Clyde Lewis of GroundZeroMedia.org. Weeknights 9 to 12 on KXL.com, 101.1 FM here in the Portland metro area and beyond. Weeknights 9 to midnight, 5 nights a week, 3 hours a night. And we provide the listen live links as well as the podcast subscription links to Clyde Lewis and KXL News on Twitter. And of course, all the articles published to go along with each episode of Ground Zero. UARS attacks. That would be the satellite. And we're not sure where it landed last weekend. The heavens open. Be still and know that there is an Antichrist. Dodging a prophetic bullet and Rama's doppelganger. Those are the latest articles from Clyde Lewis of GroundZeroMedia.org. I listen live to a good bit of the Be Still and Know That There Is an Antichrist episode discussing the resurgent Antichrist theme surrounding the Obamasiah. And we will get to that when we hit Holy Hexes a little bit later in the show. So that's all the latest from GroundZeroMedia.org, PeaceRevolution.org, CorbettReport.com, NewWorldNextWeek.com, and a huge thanks to all those hosts and producers and everybody out there who constantly raises the bar and makes, I think, all of us want to work harder and want to do better work and want to keep sharing information in a more efficient and breakthrough kind of ways. So let's get further into the first story that we hit on the latest NewWorldNextWeek.com episode. Mass musician accused of DC terrorist plot. The Massachusetts musician accused of DC terror plot. Again, feds foil remote control plane terror attack on Washington, but not the remote control plane terror attack on Washington and New York 10 years ago on 9/11. From the Columbia Broadcasting System and the Associated Press, a 26-year-old Massachusetts man has been arrested and accused of plotting to attack the Pentagon and U.S. Capitol with large remote-controlled aircraft filled with explosives. CBS News correspondent Bob Orr reported that U.S. officials say the suspect, Rezwan Ferdaus, that's R-E-Z-W-A-N-F-E-R-D-A-U-S, Rezwan Ferdaus, was deadly serious about his plans, but the plot had no chance of succeeding. Ferdaus, a U.S. citizen and Northeastern University graduate, went by the name Bollywood when he played in a Massachusetts band. However, U.S. officials say the drummer is also a self-radicalized jihadist, intent on attacking Americans in the U.S. and overseas. Ferdaus now faces charges of plotting attacks and supporting a foreign terrorist organization. Ferdaus was arrested after he bought what he believed to be 25 pounds of plastic explosives, 3 grenades, and 6 automatic assault rifles from undercover FBI agents posing as Al-Qaeda operatives. Mass musician accused of DC terror plot.
But we begin with what authorities say was a foiled plot nipped in the bud to attack the Pentagon and the Capitol with remote-controlled model aircraft. It sounds extraordinary, but prosecutors say the suspect they charged today in Massachusetts was deadly serious. Our Brian Todd has been digging into this story for us. Brian, what are you finding out?
Wolf, these are the types of model planes we're talking about. We're going to get to those in a second. First, the meat of this story. Federal authorities have arrested a 26-year-old man from Ashland, Massachusetts. His name, Rezwan Ferdaus. In an affidavit, U.S. officials say Ferdaus started his plot last year by buying cell phones, modifying them to act as electrical switches for IEDs, then giving them to people he believed were members of Al-Qaeda. He hoped they would be used to kill U.S. soldiers overseas, according to that document. But the people he was giving this equipment to were really undercover agents from the FBI. Authorities say he then expanded his plot to use these devices, model planes. They say he planned to use them like drones, operated by remote control, filled with explosives, guided by GPS. Federal authorities say he actually selected two models. This one, the F-14 Phantom. This is shown here in a picture that was provided with the affidavit. And the F-86 Sabre. These are about one-tenth the size of the actual aircraft. Now, his targets, according to the charging document, the U.S. Capitol and the Pentagon down here. Federal officials say Ferdaus traveled to Washington this spring, took photographs of the Pentagon and the Capitol. They say he also took pictures of a place called East Potomac Park. You see, it's just south of the mall here in Washington. This is where, according to the affidavit, he planned to launch the model planes filled with explosives. According to federal officials, he also planned a ground attack, planned to bring other people into the operation, people armed with automatic weapons who would then fire on people as they tried to evacuate these buildings. We have to stress one very important point, Wolf. A U.S. law enforcement official CNN spoke with today said there was no danger to the public since undercover operatives were involved very early on. This official also says there is no information that Ferdaus was connected to a foreign terrorist group, but they believe his intent was very clear. According to the affidavit, a cooperating witness once asked Rezwan Firdaus why he wanted to blow up the Pentagon. The document says he responded, quote, "That's the target, to eliminate and terrify all enemies of Allah. We have called and emailed a woman identified as an attorney for Rezwan Firdaus. We have not heard back yet." Wolf.
The undercover agents, Brian, who were working with him until the very end, they really were confident that they could prevent any real damage.
That's right. Federal officials just today, they say that just today, the operatives, the undercover operatives, gave Firdaus material that was supposed to be the explosive material C4. They say only a small amount of it was the real thing. A law enforcement official also tells us they gave him AK-47s and grenades, but those were not functional. According to a law enforcement official, during this undercover operation, Rezwan Firdaus was given the chance to back down from his plans, but he never wavered.
Calling Americans the enemies of Allah, an Ashland man is under arrest, accused in a plot to blow up the U.S. Capitol building and the Pentagon. Good evening. I'm Jack Williams.
And I'm Kate Merrill. Thanks for joining us tonight on the WBZ News at 10. Federal agents say the homegrown terrorists wanted to hit the Washington, D.C. landmarks with small remote-controlled planes carrying C-4. 26-year-old Rezwan Firdaus was taken into custody at a Framingham storage facility. He met undercover agents there to receive guns, grenades, and explosives. Christina Hager is live in Ashland tonight. Christina, officials say the public was never in any real danger.
Well, Kate, because the whole time Rezwan Firdaus was allegedly planning this jihad against the U.S., he was in very close contact with federal agents, undercover agents he thought were helping him.
At Worcester's federal courthouse, a van with dark tinted windows carrying the man accused of taking delight in the very idea of killing Americans. Hours after federal agents handcuffed him at this Framingham storage facility. This is where agents say Rezwan Firdaus was stockpiling weapons and even handcrafting tools of terrorism. Court documents paint a dark picture of the would-be terrorist. Firdaus researched, ordered, and acquired necessary components for his attack plans, including one remote-controlled aircraft, 25 pounds of C-4 explosives, six fully automatic AK-47 assault rifles, and grenades. The U.S. attorney says he planned to use an aircraft like this, an F-86 Sabre, that would be operated by a remote-controlled cell phone device Firdaus made to drop explosives on the Pentagon and U.S. Capitol buildings. The affidavit also says Firdaus appeared gratified when the undercover agents told him falsely that his first phone detonation device had succeeded in killing three soldiers and responded, quote, "That was exactly what I wanted." The disturbing views prosecutors say Firdaus expressed to the undercover agents who met him at his warehouse today. They say he was stashing weapons that had arrived just this morning. He thought he was confiding in members of Al-Qaeda. In the end, the very people who would blow up his plot.
Those court documents go on to say Firdaus also wanted to kill not only U.S. soldiers, but also women and children whom he called, quote, enemies of Allah. In Ashland, Christina Hager, WBZ News. Back to you.
All right, Christina. Thank you.
And we're learning more about the life of Rezwan Firdaus and what might have motivated his deadly plot. Law enforcement sources tell us the Ashland native and one-time band member refused to face the American flag during the Pledge of Allegiance during high school. He even burned the flag on the high school's roof. Investigators were at Firdaus's Ashland home all afternoon today. He had lived in his parents' basement. Jim Armstrong is live in Ashland tonight. And Jim, this is a family, though, that pretty much kept to themselves.
And Jack, that's part of the reason why neighbors here are absolutely dumbfounded by today's news. They describe a family, a mother and a father and two sons, who lived in the white colonial house behind me for some 14 years, but who kept so largely isolated from the rest of the community that even folks who lived across the street or next door say they had no idea about what was allegedly going on.
I just can't believe it. It's awful. It's just beyond comprehension.
People living on affluent, leafy Coburn Drive finding it hard to believe one of their neighbors now charged in a terror plot.
It's certainly eye-opening. I mean, a nice, quiet town, nice neighborhood, no action ever happens down here. Just, I guess, goes to show this could happen anywhere in this day and age.
Shocked, absolutely shocked that this would happen. You know, one of the most exciting things in Ashland is to see a squirrel cross the street.
This is quite different.
This is quite different, yeah.
Even as investigators haul out boxes of evidence from the family's home, it all just seems so unreal.
I was just taking my normal walk right now, and I didn't realize that it was this close.
He always seemed like a very nice and very smart dude.
It's even more unreal to this young man who did not want to be identified. He went to high school with Rezwan Firdaus and his brother Farhad.
I was completely shocked. I mean, just, I couldn't believe it. I really couldn't believe it. He always seemed like a nice, quiet kid to me. I knew he was a very smart kid, but he was very into music, very musically talented.
In Ashland High School's class of 03, Firdaus was voted most musical, but also described as shy, not especially popular. Interestingly, he signed his yearbook entry with this peace symbol and quoted Gandhi, offering peace and friendship and a desire to work together for unity and love, giving no indication whatsoever of what would be in his future 8 years later.
My immediate reaction, frankly, is I'm apparently our security system works, which is a good thing.
Firdaus also was apparently involved in some very unusual activity when he was a student at Ashland High School, involved in some sort of prank where he used cement to stop the doors of the school from opening outwards, and then a more disturbing incident when he was a senior in high school. He's alleged to have climbed to the roof of Ashland High School and set an American flag on fire, a law enforcement official confirming that for us, but saying charges were never filed. He also, as we mentioned, was a student who routinely would turn his back to the American flag during the Pledge of Allegiance. Indications perhaps of his anti-American sentiment. However, they pale in comparison to what he's arrested for earlier today. We're live in Ashland. Jim Armstrong, WBZ News. Jack, back to you.
Pretty frightening. Thank you, Jim.
Right now, though, there is no evidence that Firdaus trained with Al-Qaeda. But Peter Krause, a terrorism expert at Brandeis, says Firdaus probably had some help.
It's possible that the FBI undercover agents were the only people that he was talking to at every stage of this planning process, but I think it's unlikely, and if it is unlikely, I think we'll see more arrests coming in the next week or two.
Krause goes on to say that Firdaus appeared to have some skill with his hands and could have rigged the explosives, but his lack of training probably would have caused him to make a mistake along the way. Stay with WBZ News for continuing coverage of this terror arrest. We will have the very latest tonight at 11 o'clock over on Channel 4.
Remote control Rezwan. And that's Ashland, Massachusetts, not Ashland, Oregon, or Ashland, Kentucky. The latest, greatest terror bust that proves our security system must be working. Specious reasoning. When the plots are created by the feds, that is not a foreign terror organization, it's a domestic terror organization. The house that Hoover helped build. That's J. Edgar to you. So, maybe we'll find out if Alaki had anything to do with remote-controlled Rezwan. But let's change now, while still staying on the flagship site, MediaMonarchy.com, with a piece from Channel 4 by way of Michael Vail's new website, StratRisks.com. Hashtag Occupy Wall Street, U.S. police maced peaceful protesters in New York. The Occupy Wall Street campaign said police confined a small number of protesters before spraying them with mace. Clips of the incident appeared across social media. However, Channel 4 News, cannot verify the footage independently. The NYPD had so far not responded to a request for its response to the allegations. Protesters say they want to show their anger at, among other things, corporate greed and social inequality. So far, it's reported more than 100 people have been arrested. Police tactics have been compared to those used during the 2004 Republican convention, when the NYPD made sweeping arrests of several hundred demonstrators before dropping charges against almost all of them. The alleged mace incident is the latest clash between campaigners and police since the occupation began September 17th, nearly 2 weeks ago. Over the past few days, police barricades have prevented protesters from reaching the United Nations, where the General Assembly had been meeting. And you can get more on this story from NYC.gov and flashbacks to MediaMonarchy.com, where we have discussed briefly here and there Occupy Wall Street. And I know James Corbin and I on New World Next Week kind of briefly discussed our own pros and cons with these kind of situations. But now it is growing and spreading, and it's hashtag Occupy Chicago, Denver, spreading around the world. And then when you have Bank of America saying they're going to add extra charges for debit cards, you have more people saying, well, we're going to leave these banks. And while I was thinking about a lot of this and saw the videos as Michael Moore and Tom Morello, the Rage Against the Machine guy, someone on Facebook.com/Media Monarchy, a friend there, had posted a video of those guys making the rounds where Tom Morello said, I stand with those people on Wall Street. And I said, yeah, so do your bosses at Sony, Interscope, and Universal. You mean the protesters. And Michael Moore calling for civil disobedience. So, right on time, I got an email from the aforementioned Richard Grove of TragedyAndHope.com. Now, I didn't actually get permission to read this, so maybe I'll paraphrase. But right on time, right as I was thinking about this Occupy Wall Street situation, I get a note about civil disobedience without epistemology and logic. Lest we forget, Michael Moore's agent slash handler is Ari Emanuel, whose father was an Irgun terrorist, founding father of Israel, and whose brother is Rahm Emanuel, the now mayor of Chicagoland. So, basically, Michael Moore's recommending an irrational strategy bereft of the benefit of understanding the patterns of history, and B, that people practice actions against something that they do not yet understand. Now, perhaps my uncleared mangling of that, perhaps that'll open the door and we'll have to have a brief conversation with Richard Grove breaking down the angles of hashtag Occupy Wall Street. And we do have our related Occupy slash police state updates, as Webster Tarpley has a new piece out noting, don't let Soros hijack this movement. He's got an emergency program for anti-Wall Street protesters. Student loan amnesty, stopping foreclosures, defend and fully fund the social safety net, pay for health care and social services with a 1% Wall Street sales tax or the Robin Hood tax. And you can go all through that on tarpley.net. Pepper spraying cop accused of abusing Bush protesters in 2004. So just as that Channel 4 article noted, yes, the tactics are the same, and the very people are the same. Bologna, I believe, is the officer friendly of the week. This same guy. More on that from Raw Story. Occupy Wall Street protests slowly spread across the U.S. For example, hashtag Occupy Chicago protest entered its fifth day. Meanwhile, in the District of Criminals, D.C. tests disaster planning and citywide drill. Hurricane Zoe, a Category 2 storm, damaged a large number of district homes, caused major roads to flood, and left more than 87,000 D.C. residents without power. That fabricated scenario was the setting for a full-scale exercise performed by D.C.'s Homeland Security and Emergency Management Agency this past Wednesday, allowing a wide swath of district agencies to practice their yada yada. And it was on the grounds of RFK Stadium where I saw NXS in 93. Even those cleared of crimes can stay on the FBI's terrorist watch list. Surprise, surprise. That's from the New York Times, and we'll see that theme returning throughout our episode 233. Once you've been cleared of a crime, you'll still be in the system. Once you try and stop something, they'll keep it going. Border bill would expand Homeland Security powers. That is from USA Today on the coming North American Union. And the Green Bay Packers security personnel ratchet up safety measures at Lambeau Field. From postcrescent.com, they'll be using handheld wands, TSA style, as apparently there's some big Jockorama game coming up this Sunday between the some ravenous animal and some other probably horribly mangled cultural icon. So whenever they start to ratchet up the terror, and I should have mentioned at the top of the show, on my way here to the studios in southeast Portland, Oregon, on this September 30th, 2011, damn, there's a lot of planes, damn, there's a lot of jet trails in the sky. There is a lot of action on the geopolitical phony homeland security front. So anytime this all gets ratcheted up, especially on Super Bowl, I always think of the movie directed by the guy who gave Bobby Kennedy his Last Supper and then drove him to the Ambassador Hotel where he would be assassinated by a Manchurian candidate. The director of the Manchurian candidate, John Frankenheimer, also directed a film called Black Sunday.
An Israeli commando raid in Beirut. Top secret security meeting in Washington. A smuggled cargo of high explosives in Los Angeles. A shootout in Miami. A terrorist attack at the Super Bowl. It all comes together on Black Sunday.
There's a bomb on the left.
Black Sunday. It could be tomorrow. Rated R. A murder in a Los Angeles hospital. An incident in a Beirut hideout. A shootout in a Miami hotel. An explosion aboard a Japanese freighter. It all comes together on Black Sunday.
There's a bomb on the planet.
Black Sunday. It could be tomorrow. Rated R.
People of America.
A Black September broadcast in Beirut. An FBI stakeout in Miami. A Coast Guard alert in California.
This is Coast Guard 03.
A terrifying weapon tested in Nevada. It all comes together on Black Sunday.
There's a bomb on the blimp.
Black Sunday. It could be tomorrow. Rated R.
Or it could be the day after tomorrow. 1977. That was three TV commercials for John Frankenheimer's Black Sunday. Predictive programming, perhaps? Let's continue our EconoCrash notes as we've been discussing Occupy Wall Street and these protests spreading not only around the country but around the world. And remember the bit we heard from Lupe Fiasco last week, talking about the critical thinking and talking about how it goes deeper than this and how maybe your 401k supports these banksters. But we'll continue our EconoCrash notes with a piece from the Deutsche Press Agency. Latest government shutdown crisis averted for a month. The U.S. Senate passed a spending measure late Monday for the third time this year, averted a government shutdown over spending disagreements. A request for additional emergency money had threatened to bring the U.S. government to a standstill again amid wrangling in Congress, until Senate leaders announced an agreement that could avoid the issue altogether. Whew. The Senate passed 79-12, a short-term funding measure that will keep the government running through mid-November. The upper chamber of Congress avoided a looming shutdown over a request for additional money for the Federal Emergency Management Agency. FEMA said earlier it needed additional money to make it through the fiscal year, but the disaster agency indicated Monday that it might be able to stretch its budget through the end of the week when the budget year ends. Today. I like that they call it the disaster agency. That's again, that's why we have a bit of fun in the media monarchy. The answers are kind of right there in the words. The way they're spelled. You can get more on the latest government shutdown crisis averted from the New York Times and from the statecolumn.com and RTT News, and our related EconoCrash updates posted as headlines from the economiccollapseblog.com. The Federal Reserve wants to know what you are saying about it. In fact, the Federal Reserve has announced plans to identify key bloggers and to monitor billions of conversations about the Fed on Facebook, Twitter, forums, and blogs. This is yet another sign that the alternative media is having a dramatic impact. As first reported on Zero Hedge, the Federal Reserve Bank of New York issued a request for proposal to suppliers who may be interested in participating in the development of a, quote, sentiment analysis and social media monitoring solution. In other words, the Fed wants to develop a highly sophisticated system that will gather everything you and I say about the Fed on the net and that will analyze what our feelings are about the Fed. Obviously, any positive feelings about the Fed would not be a problem. What they really want to do is gather info on everyone that views the Fed negatively. It is, of course, unclear how they plan to use this info once they have it, but considering how many alternative media sources have been shut down lately, this is obviously a very troubling sign, referring, of course, to ActivistPost.com. And an article from just earlier this morning, AllGov.com, with a nice screen grab from The Simpsons, as Mr. Burns holds the meeting of the Republican Party with the rich Texan, the blue-haired lawyer, Dracula, Rainer Wolfcastle. But seriously, folks, the Super Committee meets in secret. The Joint Committee on Deficit Reduction, a.k.a. the Super Committee, which was originally a.k.a. Super Congress, but that got a little too close to the truth, so that meme was memery-hold. The Super Committee, tasked with eliminating $1.2 trillion from the federal deficit, has met secretly over the past month, keeping its discussions out of the press and refusing to divulge any of its considerations for budget cuts or tax increases. The committee secrecy would appear to be in violation of its own rules, which require that meetings be open to the public. The Sunlight Foundation, a nonprofit watchdog organization, sunlightfoundation.com, says the members of the Super Committee are denying that they're holding meetings in order to avoid long-standing requirements that those meetings be public. Banks to make customers pay debit card fee. We grabbed this story as it broke yesterday from Rupert Murdoch's phone hacking Wall Street Journal. And we can glance back at the breaking news on the front of Google News on this September 30th and see Bank of America dumps customers over $5. Today's outrage from the street. Again, from the economiccollapseblog.com, record low new home sales in 2011. More numbers. 247wallstreet.com goes into 9 American cities going broke. Are you one of them? Let's see. Camden, New Jersey. Stratford County, New Hampshire. Riverdale, Illinois. Salem, New Jersey. Detroit, Michigan. Harrison, New Jersey. Jefferson County, Alabama. Pontiac, Michigan. And Central Falls, Rhode Island. Number one on the list of 9 American cities going broke. And the last of our related EconoCrash updates posted below the latest government shutdown crisis averted for a month. Hallmark's new job loss greeting cards.
Don't think of it as losing your job. Think of it as a timeout between stupid bosses. That's the message on one of Hallmark's new line of greeting cards. WTHR has the details.
Hallmark recently rolled out a new line of layoff greeting cards, a specific section for job loss and recession humor offering words of support and encouragement. With the unemployment rate at 9%, the company says customers called in the need.
That may be, but some card buyers don't get such a good idea. A writer for Jezebel says, next time a friend loses her job, you can show her you care and are still employed yourself by sending her an $8 musical card featuring Chumbawamba. You know, I get knocked. Anyway, some cards are meant to be funny, some cheesy, some sensitive and serious. Here's what the creative director of Hallmark tells NPR. Yeah, what is the idea behind the cards? What's the message that you think you're trying to send?
The job loss is temporary and that it doesn't define the person.
Hallmark isn't the only one in favor of the concept. CBS spoke to a psychologist who is all for the layoff line.
I think verbal would be good, but supplementing with a card isn't bad. I think what this is indicative of the fact that there are so many people who are being laid off across the country, and I think by virtue of bringing it out into the open and discussing it, there's less shame attached to it, and the more shame that is attached to being laid off, the less likely you are to go out there and actually find a new job quickly. So it's not a bad thing.
But a writer for Gothamist counters the idea that the more you talk about something, the better off you'll be. Doesn't apply here. Closely behind talking on the list of effective therapeutic actions is punching. Specifically, punching anyone who hands you a card, trivializing the loss of your job. Online companies Zazzle and Greeting Card Universe are selling similar layoff cards. But the second largest greeting card company, American Greetings, has not jumped on board the job loss card campaign just yet.
Now, I must have leaned on the fast forward button on that clip, but essentially you get the idea that that's what adapting to a shifting marketplace is all about. You gotta love companies that can roll with the punches. Now, one of the related stories that we mention on the latest NewWorldNextWeek.com from CNS News. Internet hits all-time high as news source. TV at all-time low. The internet has risen to its all-time high as a primary source of news for Americans, with 43% now saying they get most of their news on national and international issues from the web, according to a new survey published Thursday. That would be now two Thursdays ago, September 22nd, by the Pew Research Center for the People and the Press. Meanwhile, television sits at an all-time low as a primary source of news for Americans, with only 66% now saying they get most of their national and international news from TV. A nadir television also hit in December 2010. Since 1991, Pew has periodically asked Americans, quote, "How do you get most of your news about national and international issues?" End quote. And we asked you that question at the top of the show. And as others have said, that's why you're here. And if you're here and if you can hear this, you are part of the solution. You are part of the revelation that we're trying to incite. So you can go to people-press.org, and we have the link of the PDF, so you can check out the poll where internet hits all-time high as news source, TV at all-time low. Again, we see the theme and the meme running through our stories. People rising up. And as long as the satellites keep flying and floating, we can keep sharing this kind of information, but we should be very aware and wary of the instantaneous loss of all of this. I think I was telling someone just the other day that I've tended to kind of always treat the internet as if, oh my God, it's like, this could go away tomorrow. This is amazing. I can't believe all of this is here. I can't believe we can do all of this stuff. So just as when Napster happened, and we'd go into the dedicated T1 line in the radio station back east after class in the evening and set up a big queue of stuff on Napster so we could download a bunch of stuff overnight, and then we'd come in the next morning before going to class and getting all the music off of there before we got in trouble. That kind of Wild Wild West mentality, if you will. I think I've tried to always carry that and always view this ability as something that could be taken away. At least in the form that we have it now and have had it. So before I digress too much, let's get our related media and memes posted below the story about the internet hitting all-time high as news source. First up, the 2012 Rock and Roll Hall of Fame nominees.
The Ohio-based Rock and Roll Hall of Fame has announced its latest crop of possible inductees. Among this year's nominees, Joan Jett and the Blackhearts, Guns N' Roses, Seattle-based Rockers Heart, and Rufus frontwoman Chaka Khan. Anything stick out about that list? A HitFix contributor explains why this year's nominees could make history. Is the Boys Club, otherwise known as the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, about to shift to Ladies Night? This year's potential class of 15 include five female or female-fronted acts. If three of the women make the final cut, It will mark the first time more than two female acts have been inducted in the same year. A Martin Report blogger gives some insight into how the Hall of Fame picks its nominees. To get into the Rock Hall, you need to be either huge like Elvis or the Beatles, incredibly influential like the Ramones or the Sex Pistols, or a critical darling like Leonard Cohen. The process is hugely inconsistent and tends to enrage fans of bands. Fans of bands like Bon Jovi, who earned a nom last year but is noticeably absent from this year's list. A writer for the boys' hometown paper, the New Jersey Star-Ledger, isn't too happy about that. By inducting critical choices ahead of bestsellers, the Hall of Fame committee probably believes it's acting as the guarantor of rock and roll integrity, but part of the institution's charter is to tell the ongoing story of popular music. And after rappers the Beastie Boys took a nom away from rockers like Bon Jovi, a panelist on CBS argues maybe it's time for more than just one Music Hall of Fame.
There's a lot of debate about influence, importance. You know, there's a lot of debate. I mean, there are people who believe, like, this is the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. You know, if hip-hop had a Hall of Fame, you know, that's where they should go.
But a writer for The Guardian points out one plus for fans of bands that did snag a nomination. For fans, there's often the opportunity to wrangle bands into reunions. This year, the biggest question mark surrounds Guns N' Roses. If inducted, would Axl Rose and Slash finally bury the hatchet? The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame will induct 5 of the 15 nominees in early 2012.
Continuing our related media meme updates, Leonard Dillon, reggae artist and lead singer for the Ethiopians, died at the age of 68. The leader of the pioneering reggae group, the Ethiopians, died in Jamaica. Leonard Dillon was 68. Began his career using the stage name Jack Sparrow in the early 1960s, recorded a series of ska songs including Bullwhip, which featured a young Bob Marley on backing vocals. Leonard Dillon later formed the Ethiopians, a trio whose best-known hits were Train to Skaville and Everything Crash, but let's listen to Reggae Hit the Town from Leonard Dillon and the Ethiopians. Reggae Hit the Town from the late Leonard Dillon and the Ethiopians, and that sources back to vinyl. I love the YouTube channels where people film themselves playing the record, and you're hearing that record play as you're watching it. It's, I don't know what it is about it. We're living in the future. If we have time, we'll listen to another track from the Ethiopians at the end of this episode. Our last related media meme update, Andy Rooney finally retiring. The CBS curmudgeon on 60 Minutes, who once said he would be glad to take a microchip and would be all about forcing everyone else to do it to prove you're not a terrorist. Good riddance. We now move to our last post on MediaMonarchy.com, the flagship site, before we move to all the other sites in the growing kingdom. It's time for the 929 News Purge, Your Deceit Knows No End. We heard that line in our opening song from the Dum Dum Girls, Just to Creep. And we begin with our BioWars EnviroHealth updates from Bloomberg, September 27th. Fukushima desolation worst since Nagasaki as residents flee. Beyond the police roadblocks that mark the no-go zone around Japan's wrecked Fukushima nuclear plant, six-foot-tall weeds invade rice paddies and vines gone wild strangle roadsides along empty streets. Takako Harada, 80, returned to an evacuated area of Litate Village to retrieve her car. Beside her house is an empty cattle pen. The 100 cows slaughtered on government order after radiation from the 311 atomic disaster saturated the area, forcing 160,000 people to move away and leaving some places uninhabitable for two decades or more. Older folks want to return, but the young worry about radiation, said Harada, whose family ran the farm for 40 years. I want a farm, but will we be able to sell anything? What's emerging in Japan 6 months since the nuclear meltdown at Tokyo Electric Power Company plant is a radioactive zone bigger than that left by the 1945 atomic bombings at Hiroshima and Nagasaki. While nature reclaims the 12-mile no-go zone, Fukushima's $3.2 billion a year farm industry is being devastated, and tourists that hike the prefecture's mountains and surfed off its beaches have all but vanished. The March earthquake and tsunami that caused the nuclear crisis and left almost 20,000 people dead or missing may cost 17 trillion yen, or $223 billion, hindering recovery of the world's third-largest economy from two decades of stagnation. That story from Bloomberg goes on, but it's worth noting that they try and make it seem as though the meltdown happened, and it was the thing that happened just after 311. Not something that's happening, and we're soaking in it. Oregon professor says that radiation from Fukushima now exceeds Chernobyl, now to levels unknown to humans or machines. More on that from the indispensable ENENews.com. Fukushima, the largest delivery of radiation into the ocean ever. Again from ENE News. Man arrested for prank calls to TEPCO. Now, is it really a prank when you're calling and saying, I feel sick? But what is new is old. U.S. secretly asked Japan to help dump nuclear reactors. The United States secretly sought Japan's support in 1972 to enable it to dump decommissioned nuclear reactors into the world's oceans under the London Convention, an international treaty being drawn up at the time. Countries working on the wording of the pact wanted to specifically prohibit the dumping of radioactive waste at sea, but Washington wanted to incorporate an exceptional clause in the case of decommissioned nuclear reactors. These facts came to light in diplomatic records held by the Foreign Ministry in Tokyo and released at the request of, I believe, this news source, Asahi, ASAHI.com. Our last BioWars EnviroHealth notes leave the nuclear nightmare for someone knocking on your door with door-to-door vaccinations. Get the
drastic measures to make sure every student is vaccinated in Natomas. School officials went door-to-door with a nurse offering the Tdap vaccine to meet a new state mandate. News 10's Natalie Fentz tagged along and has our story.
Hello, how are you, ma'am? My name is Heyman Matlock from the Natomas Unified School District.
It's not easy going door to door making sure students are vaccinated.
Your daughter is on independent study?
Yeah.
Kayla, has she been verified with her Tdap?
No.
Okay. We were coming today to give her a Tdap if she hasn't had it done yet.
Hey, Ms. Matlock, dealing with a lot of sticky situations. Despite weeks of free clinics and warnings, some Natomas kids still have not received a shot for whooping cough.
There could be some family dynamics where they're having hardships in the home, and this isn't the top priority in them making it day to day.
Hello, this is Heyman Matlock from the Thomas Unified School District.
He has a list of more than 40 left to get vaccinated. So, with a traveling nurse on hand, district officials are now left to track down kids who may be falling through the cracks.
There are a number of kids that we're finding out in our home visit today that are truant. They aren't in school. So this also gives us an opportunity to find out where those kids are that have truancy issues.
Truant kids and negligent parents are put on notice. The Natomas District is going to extremes and putting up with extremes to keep kids from getting sick.
Get the off my house.
Well, kids won't be allowed back to school Monday if they haven't been vaccinated. The district will continue door-to-door visits until everyone is vaccinated.
Well, they must be having some kind of family issues. If they don't want to put our untested and probably dangerous vaccines in their body that have mercury and squalene and God knows what else in them. We're doing the 929 News Purge, Your Deceit Knows No End. Those were our BioWars and ViroHealth updates, but before we move on to our drug war updates, I see we're at the top of the hour, and I will take this moment to remind you, my friends, you're listening to episode 233 from MediaMonarchy.com. It's September 30th, 2011, and my name's James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, cover-ups, and so much, much more. Let's keep it moving. Move along. Nothing to see here. Drug war updates. 4 Americans get pot from U.S. government. Love this story from NPR. Dateline, Eugene, Oregon. Sometime after midnight on a moonlit rural Oregon highway, a state trooper checking a car he had just pulled over found pot on a passenger. The discovery was not surprising in a marijuana-friendly state like Oregon, but the 72-year-old woman's defense was she insisted the weed was legal and given to her by none other than the federal government. A series of phone calls from a dubious trooper and his supervisor to federal authorities determined that the glaucoma patient was not joking. The U.S. government does grow and provide pot to a select few people across the United States. For the past 3 decades, Uncle Sam has been providing patients with some of the highest-grade marijuana around as part of a little-known program that grew out of a 1976 court settlement and created the country's first legal pot smoker. The program once provided 14 people government pot. Now there are 4 left. Advocates for legalizing marijuana or treating it as a medicine say the program is a glaring contradiction in the nation's 40-year war on drugs, maintaining the federal ban on pot while at the same time supplying it. Government officials say there's no contradiction. The program is no longer accepting new patients, and public health authorities have concluded that there was no scientific value to it. Stephen Gust of the U.S. National Institute on Drug Abuse told the AP, the government has only continued to supply the marijuana, quote, for compassionate reasons, end quote. One of the recipients is L.V. Masika, the chatty Oregon woman, a vocal marijuana advocate. Masika relies on the pot to keep her glaucoma under control. She entered the program in 1988 and said that her experience with marijuana is proof that it works as medicine. They won't acknowledge the fact that I do not have even one aspirin in this house, she said, leaning back on her couch, glass bong cradled in her hand. I have no pain. That story kind of blew me away. Our other drug war updates. Russia may legalize cannabis for agricultural and industrial use. Imagine that. Meanwhile, from Duluth News, Tribune.com, feds indict 27 in Duluth drug sting. But bigger and better than that, my friends, from Philly.com, 36 nabbed in a drug raid at the Boeing plant near Philadelphia. Our fine friends working for the military-industrial complex, building things so people have things to do things to other people with, they're just as hooked on illicit pharmaceutical fake drugs as the rest of America. Perhaps they're still clinging onto their job, saying, oh my God, thank God I still have this job, but I'm still kind of stressed out, and I've got these bills and these debts. I need some uppers. Oh, now I need some downers. Those are our drug war updates, which brings us to our geopolitics updates, which I made the quick addition when I was posting this up. U.S. attack in Yemen kills al-Awlaki. And now I see the story has been auto-updated by our friends at the Columbia Broadcasting System. President Barack Obama declared the killing of a fiery American-born cleric in Yemen a major blow to al-Qaeda's most active affiliate and vowed a vigorous U.S. campaign to prevent the terror network and its partners from finding a haven anywhere in the world. Awlaki and another CIA lackey, both killed. Major blow. Obama-sia says, continuing the same phony war of terror operation started by the previous puppet, who was only taking the football from the puppet before him. You know, the guy that let drugs run through MENA, Arkansas. So we had our flashback, and this was our tweet on Twitter.com/MediaMonarchy, and thankfully a lot of folks retweeted it to spread this out there. And it would be that CIA drones killed U.S. citizen Awlaki. But the flashback is that this same al-Qaeda-linked imam dined at the Pentagon after 9/11. So I even saw a tweet, yes, I follow Donald Rumsfeld on Twitter, at RumsfeldOffice.com. He was right on the money and right there on time saying the world is safer with al-Awlaki dead. So I replied and tweeted at him. Has Donald Rumsfeld replied? No, he hasn't replied. If the world is safer with al-Awlaki dead, then why did the al-Qaeda-linked imam dine at the Pentagon after 9/11? No answer yet from Donald Rumsfeld. We'll keep our fingers crossed. Furthermore, down the geopolitical headlines, USS Cole suspect to face Guantanamo tribunal. More on that from the Deutsche Press Agency and from allgov.com. Saudi women can now vote in fake elections, but they still can't drive a car and will be beaten if they are caught doing so. Our history mystery updates, divers set sight on sunken World War II ship laden with silver. Everyone would like to be laden with silver nowadays. In 1941, a Nazi torpedo tore a hole in a British merchant ship carrying a fortune in silver to England from India. The ship was part of a convoy headed for Liverpool, but it went down about 300 miles southwest of Ireland, disappearing in icy waters nearly 3 miles deep, deeper than the resting place of the Titanic. Now, divers say they have found the wreck intact, and they estimate its cargo at up to 240 tons of silver, a trove worth more than $200 million, and they plan to recover it this spring. Silver spring, if you will. Our other history mystery note, the archbishop who eulogized the assassinated John Fitzgerald Kennedy has passed away. You can get more on that from the Belief blog on CNN. But again, from the Deutsche Press Agency, suspect in shooting of U.S. politician could face trial. That's how we start our media, or rather murder and mayhem updates. The suspected shooter of U.S. Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords could be mentally fit to stand trial for murder if he continues responding to the psychiatric treatment he has been receiving at a federal prison, a government psychologist said Wednesday. Dr. Christina Peitz was testifying at a court hearing to evaluate the mental state of Jared Lee Loeffner, who was accused of killing 6 and injuring 13, including Giffords, when he opened fire at a political meeting in January. Peitz, who has treated Loeffner, aged 23, for 4 months with psychotropic and antidepressant medications, told the Tucson, Arizona court that Loeffner now understood that he had killed people and felt remorse for his actions, even though he was still delusional. She said it was likely that he would be able to stand trial if he was given another 8 months of treatment. Jared Lee Harvey Loeffner. Remote control Rezwan. We can just line them up. Patsies, useful idiots, dupes, cutouts. All used in the furtherance of the intelligence state run by the interlocking, interbred families They know no party. They know no country. They don't salute a flag. They don't worship your silly gods. But they'll use all those things and all those beliefs against you. From the LA Times, we just throw one bit in, put it on the record. Michael Jackson died instantaneously, his doctor's lawyers say. So the Michael Jackson trial has been going on. I believe there was even bizarre audio of the last wheezing of the King of Pop. And there's a pretty poorly made documentary on Netflix, on Instant Watch. It's like, Michael Jackson really is alive. And you can watch that as a double feature with the Paul McCartney's Really Dead documentary. But before we digress, let's continue down the news purge from murder and mayhem to our Obama-Saya updates, where we begin from the Mooney-owned Washington Times. Fundraising in Tinseltown puts Obama in tougher role. President Obama's three-day trip to the West Coast produced gaffes, strange encounters, and wads of campaign cash from the Democrats' reliable, loving bosom of Hollywood. The president promoted himself as a warrior for the middle class on this early campaign swing, but he raised an estimated $7 million by hobnobbing with moguls of the entertainment and high-tech industries. Among the Hollywood VIPs who turned out for Obama-Saya at a $17,900 per plate dinner late Monday night at the Chic Fig and Olive restaurant on Melrose Place in the City of Angels was DreamWorks CEO Jeffrey Katzenberg, whom the president praised for helping us consistently move an agenda forward that creates a more just and fair and more competitive America. Other celebrities included writer Aaron Sorkin, producer John Landau, musicians Quincy Jones and Will.i.am, and actors Jamie Foxx, Danny DeVito, and Eva Longoria. Thanks for the money, suckers. Let's get our other Obama-Saya updates as they tend to swirl around. Again, all the other patsies and useful idiots and dupes and cutouts on the scene, all wanting to kiss the brass ring so they can be middle manager of USSA Incorporated. First up, former Dunkin' Donuts boss Herman Cain says pretty provocatively that blacks have been brainwashed.
Why is the Republican Party poison for so many African Americans?
Because many African Americans have been brainwashed into not being open-minded, not even considering a conservative point of view. I have received some of that same vitriol simply because I am running for the Republican nomination as a conservative. So it's just brainwashing and people not being open-minded, pure and simple.
That's a strong word to talk about your fellow African Americans. Americans brainwashed?
For two-thirds of them, Wolf, that is the case. Now, the good news is, I happen to believe that a third to 50% of the black Americans in this country, they are open-minded. I meet them every day. They stop me in the airport. And so this whole notion that all black Americans are necessarily going to stay and vote Democrat and vote for Obama, that's simply not true. More and more black Americans are thinking for themselves, and that's a good thing.
And you've suggested, correct me if I'm wrong, that if you were the Republican nominee, you think a third of African Americans would vote for you?
I do believe a third would vote for me based upon my own anecdotal feedback. Now, they won't be voting for me because I'm black. They'll be voting for me because of my policies and because of what I'm offering to fix this economy, starting with, as you know, my 999 plan.
No, I did not know about your 999 plan. Is it as above, so below? Continuing, veterans attempt citizens' arrest of the aforementioned Ronald Rumsfeld in the aforementioned Boston.
And a rude welcome for former Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld, greeted by protesters before a Q&A session for his new book. Our Rondella Richardson witnessed the whole thing. So, Rondella, police were actually dragging people out of the Old South Meeting House tonight?
One man was arrested, charged with assault and battery on a police officer. Rumsfeld was out promoting this new book. However, inside, protesters taking issue with his politics. There was quite a ruckus, but Rumsfeld supporters took the mom booing back.
Basically torture, intensive interrogation that not only began in Iraq and Afghanistan.
I'm making a decision right now!
went down front and looked Donald Rumsfeld in the eye and said, I'm making a citizen's arrest.
300 paid to be here. A total of 4 protesters had to be thrown out. They had to buy the former Secretary of Defense's book to get in. The Old South Meeting House is renowned for protests dating back to before the Revolution. Pausing for the police escorts out, Rumsfeld soldiered on with a Q&A program hosted by WRKO Radio.
He mentioned the Vietnam War. He mentioned civil rights struggles. He was a member of Congress at the time. Then he became a presidential advisor.
He's one of the greatest Americans that has ever lived.
Known and Unknown is Rumsfeld's memoir.
His whole career, he's at or near the epicenter of events that happened in the last 40 years in this country.
The book tour has a vocal following.
He lied us into Iraq. He lied about weapons of mass destruction. He lied about Saddam Hussein being involved with 9/11.
The police were gentle. They didn't tackle us when we stood up.
And Rumsfeld had these questions all pre-screened. He did not take questions from the press. After an hour, he was quickly escorted out of a back door. Live in Boston, Ron Della Richardson, News Center 5.
All our favorite old ghosts popping back up. And as the guy said, you know, he's just been so close to all the pivotal events. Like the devil with the scabbard in Jesus' side. Donald Rumsfeld was there. And one thing the guy didn't mention was he also helped bring us aspartame. Ron Paul went on The Daily Show and is on the verge of an explosion of interest. That clip you can get on Infowars.com, but our last related Obama Saya updates, oh, that's right, it's all pretty much fixed anyway. Diebold voting machines hacked with $10 in parts.
Inserting alien electronics into the electronic voting machine in a classic man-in-the-middle attack allows would-be vote tamperers to control the touchscreen, but also the information being sent to the voting machine's computer. Cost of parts for this attack is $10 to $26 in retail quantities, much cheaper in volume. This attack does not require understanding what the computer or microprocessor in the voting machine is doing. This attack highlights the importance of checking inside electronic voting machines for evidence of alien electronics or other evidence of tampering.
Hello, I'm Roger Johnston.
And I'm John Warner.
We're with the Vulnerability Assessment Team in Argonne National Laboratory. This video demonstrates some potential man-in-the-middle electronic attacks on the Diebold TS electronic voting machine. Now, we previously demonstrated similar kind of man-in-the-middle attacks on a Sequoia Advantage ABC voting machine. And indeed, we believe these man-in-the-middle attacks are potentially possible on a wide variety of electronic voting machines.
We are trying to pick specifically on Diebold or Advantage ABC Plus. These just happen to be the voting machines we have access to. The attacks we've implemented in these machines, we believe, would work on a large variety of voting machines. And the way it basically works, in essence, is you have the brains of the machine and a user interface. Now, the user interface has to communicate with the brains, and that communication channel is where the man-in-the-middle attack goes. This is a fundamentally very powerful attack, and we believe that voting officials should become aware of this and stop focusing strictly on cyber. There's a very large physical protection component of the voting machine that needs to be addressed.
Alien electronics indeed. So if you decide not to vote correctly for the pre-selected phony choices in an election, we'll just rig the hardware anyway. We finish up the 929 News Purge, Your Deceit Knows No End, with West Virginia-wary, but first, Oregon oddities. Oregon homeless student ranks on the rise. And you can get that from KTVZ.com. Time running out for missing cycle Oregon man, and this actually connects to a coworker at my store. And the last note, a story I'd never heard of, KPTV.com, murder of Portland boy, still a mystery a decade later as we still wonder what happened to Kyron Horman. But finally, West Virginia-wary, my home state, all these headlines come from WVMetroNews.com. You gotta love this. New chemical plant for Chemical Valley. That's not from The Onion. New study shows many pregnant women test positive for drugs. Morgantown murder under investigation, just after I was singing their praises last week. And the last note, Governor Rick Perry hits Wheeling. And I suppose I could have thrown that under the Obama Saya updates, but fortunately it does look like Perry and all his Logan Act-defying shenanigans is really taking a hit from the Gardasil scandal. And as we noted on New World Next Week, anytime all these puppets can actually sling real mud to help destroy the other puppet, I think we all win because the information comes out. And that's what can happen when gangsters and fake middlemen battle for turf. So that is everything from the flagship site, MediaMonarchy.com, and we now move for the remainder of the show to all the other sites in the kingdom. First up, FoodWorldOrder.com, and we'll start with the 929 Binge and Purge, Pantries, Pets, and Pig Thieves, as the EconomicCollapseBlog.com asks the question, is the government stockpiling food in anticipation of an economic crisis? Well, if they're not, everyone else seems to be. Seattle Post-Intelligencer reporting emergency food pantries become a mainstay. Beacon News reports Illinois food bank grows to meet bigger demand. Jacksonville.com reports food pantry repeat visits increase in Northeast Florida. And even from USA Today, need for pet food banks is up in a down economy. And the scary thing that we have to throw out there is thinking about these people trying to take care of their pets, which are parts of the family. But if things get really down and dirty, people are going to eat your pets. That's about as blunt as I can put it. So as if to drive that point home from the New York Times, Midwest farmers on alert as pig thieves strike. And the question, out of Buffalo, New York, will food trucks continue to exist?
Now to our other big story this noon. Can restaurants on wheels coexist with their brick-and-mortar competitors with them? That's the question they've been taking on this morning down at Buffalo City Hall. News 4's Al Waters is live for you with more on this story. Al.
Well, Victoria, those food trucks are gaining in popularity in downtown Buffalo, but the owners of the brick-and-mortar establishments and their landlords say the way things are right now, it's an uneven playing field. Now, on a good day at lunchtime, long lines of customers gather around the mobile food vendors who are subject to some restrictions, but get to pack up and move on when lunchtime is over. Restaurant owners say food trucks are taking away their customers, are not subject to property taxes, building inspections, and other expenses, so the Common Council is considering a new law to kind of even the playing field.
This is America. You got a good product, people go to it. It is about protecting the safety of our community. It's about making sure, when I say level playing field, you know, if I can't park my car there, can you park the truck? It's about making things clear.
The proposed legislation shortcomings are unfortunate because mobile food vending can offer numerous benefits to the city of Buffalo. But as it is written, it provides more questions than answers.
I would like to see the restaurants and those in opposition get on the same page and realize that the document that was presented was both fair and consistent for all parties, and it's something that's been drawn from other cities, and it would save everybody a lot of time.
Now, the council is forming a citizens panel of truck operators, downtown restaurant operators, and Buffalo citizens to come up with a plan they believe will be fair to everybody, and that's expected. They're expected to have that by the next council meeting. Reporting live from Buffalo City Hall, Al Waters, News 4 at noon.
Food trucks or chain restaurants? Netflix or Blockbuster? Things are rapidly changing, and there are many positives coming about, but it's still going to be painful. Our last couple of Binge and Purge notes, what U.S. food companies don't tell you about your food, from the Huffington Post. Food inflation accelerates in India. That is from Bloomberg, and again from the New York Times. Vermont town shaken by a co-op killing. And it looks like an employee walked in and murdered his boss. But let's go get the rest on foodworldorder.com from the Associated Press. Cantaloupe outbreak could be deadliest in a decade. Health officials say as many as 16 people have died from possible listeria illnesses traced to Colorado cantaloupes, the deadliest food outbreak in more than a decade. The CDC said last Tuesday that 72 illnesses, including 13 deaths, are linked to the tainted fruit, with a link to the CDC themselves. State and local officials say they are investigating three additional deaths that may be connected. What is also connected, from naturalnews.com, notes, Listeria does not grow on cantaloupes. Why the deadliest food outbreak of the decade is yet another food scare campaign brought about by industrial farming. The other related update, Florida grocery stores recall spinach dip for Listeria. That's from eatdrinkbetter.com. Tyson ground beef recalled in 14 states from WebMD. A potential E. coli contamination has spurred the recall of over 130,000 pounds of ground beef products. On September 27th, the USDA issued a Class 1 recall of ground beef products shipped from Emporia, Kansas by Tyson Fresh Meats Incorporated to 14 states. A Class 1 recall is the highest risk category and is issued when there is a, quote, reasonable probability that eating the food will cause health problems or death, end quote, according to the USDA's website. They also, quote, strongly encourage consumers to check their freezers and immediately discard any product subject to this recall. Again, more from thinkprogressaboutlawsuits.com and the New York Daily News. But that's not all. From Food Safety News, recalled ground beef was bound for school lunches. Some 40,000 pounds of frozen ground beef that was intended to be served for lunch at six school districts in Georgia recalled because it may be contaminated with E. coli. In a news release issued with the link for you, fsis.usda.gov, they said that Palo Duro Meat of Amarillo, Texas, processed the frozen beef on September 9th and shipped it to two warehouses in Georgia for further distribution to institutions, including the school districts in Georgia associated with the National School Lunch Program. There have been no reports of illnesses connected to the ground beef. Soylent beef is made of people. From grist.org, asking the question, did a government study just prove that BPA is safe? Though it's dropped from the headlines recently, the bisphenol A discussion continues to rage. California is one Jerry Brown signature away from a partial ban of the chemical, which is used in everything from canned goods to PVC plastic to cash register receipts. There's ample evidence that BPA, an endocrine disruptor, has been linked to various ills, including diabetes, cancer, and heart disease. Some scientists are even raising questions about the damage it's doing to our oceans. And despite FDA foot-dragging on the issue, the government is worried. The National Institutes of Health recently initiated a $30 million research program, though not without some controversy, to examine the growing risks and make a final call on BPA safety. Now, a new study by U.S. government scientists purports to debunk the entire BPA threat. It claims that BPA poses no risk whatsoever and goes so far as to conclude that every previous study that found otherwise was fundamentally flawed. If true, that would be great news. Getting BPA off the toxic chemical list would make everybody's life a lot easier. But is that the case? And we noted last week, BPA-free containers are still leaching chemicals. NaturalSociety.com reporting radiation in rice found in Japan. After testing rice near a crippled nuclear plant in Japan, Japanese researchers found high levels of radiation on the rice. The researchers took a sample of unharvested rice and found that it contained 500 becquerels of cesium per kilogram. They tested over 400 spots in Fukushima Prefecture. And it just goes on. Food Freedom reporting GMO cultivation dropping in the EU, except in Spain and Portugal. In the European Union, only 8 countries out of 27 commercially grow GMOs. Cultivations, however, decreased steadily since 2009, except in Spain and Portugal this year, where there is a slight increase. With more from truthabouttrade.org. Grocery store CEOs should refuse Monsanto's GMO sweet corn, from Credo Action. Right now, Monsanto, the corporation responsible for producing roughly 90% of GM seeds around the globe, is working to bring their new GMO sweet corn to a grocery store aisle or farmer's market near you. More from thewhip.net. But unlike Monsanto's other GMO crops, which are primarily fed to animals, which is a whole other discussion, this sweet corn is intended for direct human consumption. you and CEOs and employees and everybody need to tell food companies, we don't want GMO sweet corn in our grocery stores. More from truefoodnow.org. And continuing on that vein, but concluding our Food World Order coverage, the right to choose what we eat. Does an individual really have the right to eat whatever he or she wants to eat? That's the fundamental question behind ruralvermont.org's food sovereignty campaign, encouraging towns and villages to consider the issue of food sovereignty at their 2012 town meetings. We declare the right of communities to produce, process, sell, and purchase local foods. In recognition of Vermont's traditional agricultural systems, we assert these vital principles at the foundation of local food sovereignty. And you can get that whole mission statement as a PDF and get more, again, from foodfreedom.wordpress.com. We'll now shift gears wildly over to cyberspacewar.com, where we will begin again with the 929 DEFCON news purge, cookies retention, and a heavenly palace. Continuing the theme that we've discussed before, an exclusive out of New Zealand from stuff.co.nz. Facebook tracks you even after you log out. With more from cryptagon.com, Australian technology expert discovers Facebook cookies. That would be CIA book cookies. Furthermore, from TechCrunch, Facebook to form its own political action committee. Continuing the theme, after the outcry, however, that we reported for you last week, OnStar is now backing down on vehicle data collection. That would be continuing to collect your data after you canceled the service. Facebook tracks you even after you log out. FBI keeps you on the watch list even after you've been cleared. Retention periods of major cellular service providers. That's the name of the PDF link for you of the secret memo revealing that Verizon stores your data the longest. State Department employee faces firing for posting WikiLeaks link. Bradley Manning and Julian Assange nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize. I believe Julian Assange responded by calling the panel tools. Anonymous hacktivists go hip-hop. And I was going to play that clip, but there's just not enough time, and I didn't like it enough. However, another case of methinks they doth protest too much. ICE official who fights child porn arrested for it.
A top immigration and customs enforcement official from South Florida faces child pornography charges. 50-year-old Anthony Mangione faced a judge Wednesday after a nearly six-month-long investigation. Here's Florida's WSVN with more.
Agents say they found child pornography on his home computer. Mangione has been on administrative leave since that investigation began back in April. He's facing a judge today.
Mangione is charged with receiving child pornography along with possession and transportation of it between March and September 2010. And as a blogger for Daily Mail notes, some might call this karma. As special agent in charge of ICE's South Florida office, Mangione often praised the agency's efforts to fight child pornography in both the cyber and real worlds. The Sun Sentinel quotes Mangione in a 2008 press release after ICE put a man behind bars for 10 years. The crime? Using the internet to lure in a minor for sexual activities. Mangione said, "This case reveals the disturbing truth that child predators will go to great lengths to sexually exploit minors. ICE is committed to identifying and arresting these individuals who seek to victimize children and help ensure that justice is served." But Mangione has pleaded not guilty, so he's innocent until proven otherwise. But the emails reportedly found on his AOL account now have him facing up to 50 years in federal prison. And in court Wednesday, West Palm Beach's WPTV reported a new development. Mangione is headed to Miami because both the defense and prosecution want a psychological evaluation of him. And the judge agreed to it. Here's why.
His defense attorney did talk to us outside of the courthouse as to why this psychological evaluation was requested. Here's what he said.
Well, because the government has concerns that given the magnitude of the charges, that he might melt down. So there is no such real concern, and it's going to be addressed.
If convicted, Mangione will have to register as a sex offender. He has served 27 years in law enforcement and has headed up ICE's regional office since July 2007.
Hopefully, he'll share a cell with Mark Foley. But our last couple of notes on the 929 DEF CON. Sun unleashes two massive X-class solar flares. Earth in crosshairs of a huge solar storm caused by sunspot 1302? Well, the Daily Mail has updated it with hues and cries of astonishment for the best ever auroras seen over Britain thanks to huge solar flares, northern lights seen over southern England, but bursts of solar radiation could wreak havoc with communication systems. And our last note on the 929 DEF CON from Danger Room, Heavenly Palace 1, China set to launch its own space station for mission unknown. Continuing on cyberspacewar.com, living in a radioactive world, CHUD. And that's when the CHUDs came at me. Cannibalistic humanoid underground dwellers. But is predictive programming as significant as we so often seem to stress? Alan Watt of Cutting Through the Matrix gives a concise view of the role played by predictive programming and its recognized importance since the time of Plato. Watt also makes clear Hollywood's, the magicist's holy wood, the magic wand, they play a primary role in the process. A review of CHUD, a 1984 B-grade flick, seems prophetic and appropriate, or just predictive, when its storyline of a corrupt officials who dispose of radioactive waste in a clandestine program dubbed Contamination Hazard Underground Disposal now seems uncomfortably close to our present reality. Wayne Mattson adds several new tie-ins to our nuclear dilemma in a recent Opinion Maker article, blowing readers away in an expose of the dark world of black ops and nuclear smuggling, which ties the death of purported CIA asset Roland Carnaby on the streets of Houston, Texas in 2008 to the movement of plutonium out of the U.S. The Opinion Maker article describes Israel's need to ramp up old smuggling networks as a result of an equipment failure at their Dimona facility in the 90s. Israel located target by tapping U.S. government networks through Amdocs, the Israeli communications company. The Pantex nuclear facility near Amarillo possesses high-grade plutonium, which Israeli smugglers trucked and shipped out through the port of Houston. Carnaby determined through video surveillance of the port the Israeli operation shipped more than needed to replace Dimona's lost production. The Israelis were selling plutonium on the black market to Japan. Japan discovered, in turn, they were stiffed by paying top dollar for old plutonium, which provided them with only short-lived nuclear weapons. The Japanese planned on blowing the whistle, but Israel and the U.S. set Stuxnet to work that resulted in the Fukushima disaster. Whew. CHUD made viewers familiar with high corruption and an expectation of nuclear crimes with radioactive fallout. Net neutrality rules published, lawsuits soon to follow. From threat level, the FCC has finally officially published long-delayed rules prohibiting cable, DSL, and wireless internet companies from blocking websites and requiring them to disclose how they slow down or throttle their networks. The so-called net neutrality rules, with a PDF link for you, passed along party lines in late December last year in a 3-2 vote, were published in the Federal Register last Friday, September 23rd, and will go into effect on November 20th. Oh, look, here's an update. Free Press files a lawsuit on FCC's net neutrality rules. More on that from PC World. A great little satirical video. UARS located without space agency assist. It's a comedy video. It's basically a sort of candid camera where they trick people into watching someone's car, and when they turn their back for a moment, they replace the whole front hood with a satellite that crashed into it, making a joke of the fact that this satellite came back into our atmosphere sometime last weekend, and no one seems to know where it went. But rest assured, I imagine that some of the amateur researchers out there that have popped up in every field, I think post 9/11, thanks to what we have right here, the way we're talking to each other wherever and whenever we are in the world, hearing each other and sharing this information, it's there. Moon to have no fly zones by October TheHindu.com reporting that, according to the Science Journal, by the end of this month, NASA is expected to come up with a set of recommendations for spacecraft and astronauts visiting the U.S. government property on the moon. Of course, these recommendations will not be legally binding, as the 1967 Outer Space Treaty makes it clear that the lunar surface has no owner. Despite the lack of ownership, NASA is hopeful that other countries will respect the U.S. sentiments. Incidentally, the restriction list contains more than the historical sites. For instance, the list includes studying discarded food and abandoned astronaut feces. ISS streaming of time-lapse view flying over the Earth, a pretty amazing video. You do sometimes have to take the time and take the moment to watch some of these things going on in outer space and just be in awe. What does it feel like to fly over the Earth? A 55-second time-lapse video taken from the front of the International Space Station as it orbits our planet at night. Unbelievable. Last couple bits on cyberspacewar.com. Asteroid 4, Vesta, factoids, and Vestoids. More on the brightest object in the asteroid belt, that is Vesta. And something we briefly discussed last week, as we were staring down the barrel of so many things with the equinox and the new moon and Operation Mountain Guardian and Palestinian statehood, there was this: time travel. Faster than light particles may be physics revolution.
Scientists at the CERN Nuclear Research Center in Geneva fired neutrinos, which are tiny subatomic particles, from their lab to another one 730 kilometers away. The neutrinos hit the target faster than even light can.
In terms of distance, they were 20 meters ahead out of a distance of 730 kilometers. It is the first time that we have experimental evidence of a particle traveling faster than light, which is completely unexpected in physics as we know it.
These particles are 6 kilometers per second faster than light. Strange, because 100 years ago, Einstein suggested nothing can go faster than light. If these scientists are right and Einstein was wrong, whatever we know about our universe will soon be turned on its head.
This may be the first very small insight into a new physics that would have applied during the Big Bang. It is therefore of paramount importance in our comprehension of time, space, and the universe.
Till other scientists do the same experiment and make similar observations, the new results will not be accepted. And that could take a few months. American scientists had reported neutrinos traveling faster than light in 2007, but could never confirm the results. In New Delhi, I'm Jaimon Joseph.
That doesn't mean we'll be building time machines anytime soon. And I can't remember what I was going to say about net neutrality when I trailed off there a minute ago, but perhaps it'll come back to us at some point. But we got to quickly move to our last site in the kingdom, holyhexes.com. And we'll begin, as we did with the other sites, with the 929 pop culture news purge, faith, guitars, and church calendars. And we return to the subject of faith healing in Oregon as Oregon jury convicts the faith healing Hickmans of manslaughter. More on that from our own Oregonian. But from GodDiscussion.com and going up to Green Bay, the frozen tundra of Lambeau Field in Black Sunday, man steals guitar from a Green Bay grave, but the diocese detective work gets it back to the dearly departed.
A day after the ground superintendent at the Alloway Catholic Cemetery and Mausoleum is charged for stealing a valuable guitar from a casket, police say they're confident it is an isolated incident. Jeff Alexander has more.
The state of Wisconsin versus Stephen Connard.
After Stephen Connard made his initial appearance in court yesterday for allegedly stealing a Fender Telecaster guitar from Randall Jordan's casket, Jordan's grief-stricken family raised a disturbing question.
How many other people have you done this to?
Police say Jordan's daughter isn't alone in worrying about Connard's past 18 years as a cemetery worker.
Definitely getting a lot of calls and even word of mouth now, as everybody's wondering, and I guess I would be concerned also if I had a loved one that was being possibly buried with valuables.
Sanborn says after investigators recovered the guitar from Connard's home and returned it to Randall Jordan's family, their focus immediately turned to other potential thefts.
We've done a lot of checking. There's search engines we go out on. We can check to see if anything's been pawned by these subjects in the past. which we have not found anything upon.
Detectives also learned Conard is a musician and plays in a band. They believe he planned to keep the guitar for his own personal use. Along with police, the Green Bay Diocese says it's also confident this is the first time their ground superintendent allegedly stole from a casket. Still, Sanborn says he understands the many questions. He hopes his answers provide some peace.
In this case, yes, I can rest easy that this is an isolated incident.
Jeff Alexander, Action 2 News, Green Bay.
This may be an isolated incident, but we can see it in all types of forms where people get into positions where they can abuse the power that titillates their proclivities, if you will. North Platte, Nebraska Library defends the freedom to read Wicca and occult books and just essentially all books during their banned book week. And our last note on this 929 Pop Culture News Purge, faith guitars and church calendars. Men from Framingham, Massachusetts Church bear it all in a calendar.
All right, church group in Framingham is doing more than burying their souls at the weekly Sunday service.
They're also almost burying it all, hoping to uncover some support for their church. Krista Delcamp in Framingham with the skinny on this story. Krista.
Yeah, well, you know, this Universalist Church here says it was founded back in the 1700s. And boy, if the Founding Fathers could see these guys now, they are stripping away their clothes and their inhibitions for a good cause.
Grinning and nearly bearing it all, take a look at the boys of the First Parish in Framingham, showing off some skin to raise money for their church. You can tee it up with Mr. August. There's Mr. March, strumming on a well-placed banjo. And how about this Easy Rider? Ladies, get revved up for Mr. September.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how do you look?
In the picture? Totally awesome for an old guy.
The oldest of this bold bunch, a retired pastor in his 80s who says he's proud of his body.
The older body has its own elegance.
There are stories behind every shot. Mr. April loves to sing.
And I'm Mr. April.
Mr. October has some rod skills. He caught that bass that gave him cover. And Mr. December probably used that racket to swap some bugs during his photo shoot.
8 o'clock at night. And it was June, and as I sat there, sort of naked, I fooled everybody except the mosquitoes.
They felt special, and they really wanted to do their thing for the church. I think they had a lot of fun, and they really let go of their inhibitions to make this happen.
Proving you're never too old to say,
we're hot!
And now they are just hoping that the calendar is a hot seller. Back in 2006, the ladies of the same church did their own calendar. It actually sold out and raised 26 grand. Live in Framingham tonight, I'm Krista Delcamp, 7 News.
Yes, she did actually say rod skills. As it just gets more ridiculous and unbelievable, continuing on holyhexes.com, I saw this op-ed in the Sunday New York Times. And it's called Why the Antichrist Matters in Politics. The end is near, or so it seems to a segment of Christians aligned with the religious right. The global economic meltdown, numerous natural disasters, and the threat of radical Islam have fueled a conviction among some evangelicals that these are the last days. While such beliefs might be dismissed as the rantings of a small but vocal minority, apocalyptic fears helped drive the anti-government movements of the 1930s and 40s and could help define the 2012 presidential campaign as well. The very next day, while the Obamasiah was getting millions from Hollywood suckers, the day before he would take part in the cocked pistol terror drills in the deep underground facilities near the New World Airport in Denver, Colorado. Why the Antichrist Matters in Politics was published Sunday in the New York Times, and then Monday night, a heckler calls Obama the Antichrist during a speech at the House of Blues in the City of Angels. We have a before and after piece on Dick Cheney. Again, we're revisiting all our old devils as if to hopefully illustrate that there is no change. Dick Cheney will speak at Vancouver Club. That would be the notorious child trafficking Vancouver Club. And you can read more about it from Henry Makow and others that have written about pedophile judges. The follow-up piece, See Dick Lie, Hear Dick Talk About Torture, with links to CTVBC, and the HuffingtonPost.ca, and people, you know, wanting to arrest Dick Cheney and people wanting to arrest Donald Rumsfeld. But who have we arrested? A Florida murder suspect who claims she's a part vampire, part werewolf. Florida teenager behind bars as an accessory to the brutal murder of 16-year-old Jacob Hendershot, but that may not be the most shocking part of the crime. Stephanie Pisty says she believes she's part vampire and part werewolf. Florida police say that in July, Pisty's friends lured Hendershot to a house, killed him, left his body in a storm drain. Police had originally said Hendershot's was murdered because Pisty had accused the 16-year-old of raping her, according to CBS affiliate WTSP. And there are links to CBS News and the aforementioned WTSP, and you can watch some of the video clips, and it even gets into possible cult activity, aside from the obvious occult activity. 800-year-old witch's graveyard discovered in Italy from the Daily Mail. Remains of 800-year-old remains of what archaeologists believe was a witch from the Middle Ages after 7 nails were found driven through her jawbone. The grim discovery was made during a dig in what is thought to be a witch's graveyard after another woman's skeleton was found surrounded by 17 dice, a game which women were forbidden from playing 800 years ago. Some of the commenters on the Mail Online think these women were more likely thought to be revenants, which you may recall from last week's story, skeletons with rocks wedged in their jaws. Roving revenants. Occulted meaning of the Denver International Airport and Operation Cocked Pistol. VigilantCitizen.com breaks down some of the symbolism of DIA and the New World Airport, Operation Paperclip, and of course, Cocked Pistol, the maximum readiness drill that went down in Denver on the 27th with the Obamasiah at the helm. And finally, finishing up holyhexes.com from theregister.co.uk. As if there weren't enough strange rantings on the internet already, Google just uploaded 5 of the Dead Sea Scrolls in super high res. Of course, the Dead Sea Scrolls are strange rantings that, unlike your average YouTube contribution, are of great historic and religious significance. The scrolls were written 2,400 years ago by a desert-dwelling Jewish tribe and recount important passages from the Old Testament, as well as other passages that aren't included in the Bible. Over 850 of them were discovered in 11 caves along the West Bank and are the oldest known surviving copies of biblical and extra-biblical documents. The 5 scrolls uploaded by Google are the Book of Isaiah, the War Scroll, the Temple Scroll, the Commentary on Habakkuk Scroll, and the Community Rule Scroll as Google unfurls the Dead Sea Scrolls.
The Dead Sea Scrolls are ancient Jewish manuscripts discovered in the area of the Dead Sea by Bedouins between 1947 and 1956. Hundreds were discovered, including the most ancient biblical manuscript on earth, the Great Isaiah Scroll. These documents were hidden in caves on the eve of the destruction of the city of Jerusalem by the Romans. Since 1965, you have to come to the Shrine of the Book. You have to be physically in Jerusalem to see the scrolls. Today, after 2,000 years, thanks to Google's technology, these documents are online. We took very high-resolution photographs, which allows us to magnify and to explore by column, chapter, and verse, from the Hebrew or even from an English translation.
Google's mission is to organize the world's information and make it universally accessible and useful. One cannot think of content and information which is more important than content related to the cultural and religious heritage of so many people in the world. What is really amazing is to take 2,000-year history and make them available to you, to anybody, to make them one click away, wherever you are, in your office, in your home, on your mobile.
The Dead Sea Scrolls give us a new perspective about ancient life, society, and thought. They promote interfaith dialogue. They promote understanding between human beings. Now you are not just a passive reader from the scroll. You become active. You have the chance to understand why these ancient manuscripts became the greatest archaeological discovery of the 20th century.
Now, as we roll up the scroll of this episode 233, my friends, in the remaining time, as we've been trying to do over the past couple of weeks, I want to invite you to come join me over on twitter.com/MediaMonarchy. It's fast and it's fun and it's easy and it's so much simpler and it's all content. At NavigateNetflix.com, of course, the news outlet for NavigatingNetflix.com. Some of the great documentaries I checked out that are all on Instant Watch over the last week, Strange Powers, Stephen Merritt and the Magnetic Fields documentary, a decade in the making, goes into the deep-voiced heart and soul of the indie pop group, the Magnetic Fields. Phil Oakes, There But For Fortune. Phil Oakes has kind of fallen into the memory hole, but he rose to fame at the height of the 1960s protest movements, and it even featured Jello Biafra as one of the talking heads, who was the first person I ever heard mention Phil Oakes. Also, during the 1960s protest movement, and they were both featured in both films, No Direction Home, Bob Dylan by Martin Scorsese, and the highly entertaining, but almost like the meeting people is easy of comedy documentaries, that is Conan O'Brien, Can't Stop. But we also, my friends, started at Pump Up the Volume, focusing pretty much exclusively on music. As we're posting up some of the Song of the Days and free MP3s of new music, we've got tweets about what you heard in this episode, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and Michael Jackson's trial. But you can also note that the Beastie Boys were among the class of nominees for this year's Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Arctic Monkeys on Leno, the Dum Dum Girls, Wild Flag, St. Vincent, The Drums Forever, and it's been confirmed, and it's coming up in 1 hour as I speak to you here on the West Coast, it has been confirmed that Radiohead is going to play hashtag Occupy Wall Street at 4 p.m. in Manhattan today, September 30th. And of course, twitter.com/MediaMonarchy, where we have a lot going on, asking Donald Rumsfeld questions, connecting up with other folks. We have nearing 2,000 followers, and again, it's all content, and I really enjoy it. We're going to go out yet again with some music, my friends, so we'll hear more music from the late, great, now passed away lead singer of the Ethiopians. We're going to hear Engine 54 from a Trojan Records collection, and that is it. Episode 233 for September 30th, 2011. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show MediaMonarchy.com, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. And I love doing this. This is my passion. I've always loved sharing information with folks, and I hope that it shows, and I hope that you enjoy the show and that you'll tell other people about it. If you find alternative media valuable, if it enriches your life, spread the word, spread your digits, spread your Bitcoin links, anything and everything helps support what we're trying to do here. Again, throw out a thanks to praradio.org, zeropointradio.com, revereradio.net, and our newest affiliate, kdxradio.com, who will be rebroadcasting Media Monarchy Saturday nights at 11 Central Time. Thank you all so very much. As always, don't hate the media. Become the media. Take care. Thank you.
Spanish Town, Bible Walk, Montego Bay. To Bible Walk, Montego Bay. I said these people on the countryside used to rely on an engine. 54, it's engine, engine, 54.
MediaMonarchy.com is your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies and cover-ups. Featuring weekly radio shows on the Portland Radio Authority, PRAradio.org, the New World Next Week video series with CorbettReport.com, plus special interview episodes, B-sides, mixtapes and so much more. Send news tips to MediaMonarchy@gmail.com. You can make a donation or mail media to the Monarchy at P.O. Box 12165, Portland, Oregon 97212. Thanks to all the internet and community radio stations who broadcast these shows, and most of all, thanks to you. Remember, don't hate the media, become the media.
Whether you went on with the diary, or whether you did not cooperate, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.